This is the Sports Illustrated Boxing Podcast.
It's boxing.
A look inside boxing with Sports Illustrated's Chris Mannix. Interviews, analysis, and everything going on in boxing. And now a man who I wish was called the Boston Bleeder.
All doctors to the ER.
It's sort of like getting punched in the face.
Chris Mannix.
All right, welcome back to another episode of the SI Boxing Podcast. On this episode, we've got a lot of news to get into. You've got Tyson Fury and Deontay Wilder 3 falling apart. Teofimo Lopez, Vasily Lomachenko this weekend. And I continue to harp on my favorite subject, that being a middleweight fight between Demetrius Andrade and Jermall Charlo. Are we any closer? Is it at all possible to get that damn fight? Dan Rayfield, longtime boxing writer with ESPN, now with BoxingScene.com and Ring Magazine. He joins me to discuss that and much more. A little bit later on, Teofimo Lopez himself, the 135-pound title holder at 23 years old, in the biggest fight of his career this weekend, a massive showdown against Vasily Lomachenko, must-see TV, which you can catch on ESPN. Teofimo talks to me about his preparation for this fight, the back and forth he's had with Lomachenko, and why he thinks that he can upset one of the best pound-for-pound fighters in the world. So great conversation with Teofimo Lopez. Quick housekeeping note, as always, best way to support this podcast, get over to Apple Podcasts, post a comment, leave a rating. It's simple, it's easy, it's free. It is the very best way to make sure that we keep doing this podcast week after week. That's it. All right, on to my conversation with Dan Rayfield. All right, Dan Rayfield is here, longtime boxing writer for ESPN, USA Today, now working over at Boxing Scene and Ring Magazine. Dan, good to see you again, buddy.
Thank you very much, Chris. You know, I'm always a friend of the pod.
Always a friend of the pod. Multiple appearances here.
I'm probably the leader, right? Am I the leader?
You got to. IDEC is up there, too, between you and Keith IDEC, two prominent leaders in the clubhouse.
I know Keith and I have been on together a couple of times also. So.
Yes. That's when you bring in the tag team champions for that pod. I'm glad to have you here this week, though, because there's a lot going on in boxing right now, and as there often is. But the biggest news this week, Dan, was the revelations by Tyson Fury in The Athletic, which he subsequently put on social media, that he was going to bypass a third fight with Deontay Wilder. He was going to take some kind of fight in December. And then he was going to go straight into the anticipated showdown heavyweight unification fight against Anthony Joshua. Now, we know, and I'm sure you feel the same way, this has always been a fight that never really had a firm date. It was October, it was December, but even the December 19th date has kind of been, you know, off for a week or so or more now. Fury is adamant that he is not going to face Wilder in 2020, and he's not going to face Wilder before he faces Anthony Joshua. What do you make of this situation, and how likely do you think it is that what Tyson Fury says is going to happen actually does happen?
I think it's probably going to happen the way that Fury says. The fight between him and Wilder, the third fight, was only going to happen because of their contract. There was no real public demand for a third fight, let's be honest. I mean, the first two fights, absolutely a lot of interest in those fights. Second fight did a big number on pay-per-view, but not enough where they made money. The fighters made money, but the promotion and the networks, they didn't. It did not do as well as they needed to do to make their numbers work. So I don't think there was huge interest in that fight from the companies. I don't think there was a huge interest from the fans. So I don't think they really care about it. And that there was dates for the fight, in first one in July, then one in October, and then the one that was supposed to be in December. Obviously, July came and went, you know, partly because of the pandemic, but also people should realize that Deontay Wilder had a surgery on a biceps injury that occurred when he fought him in the second fight. And then, of course, what happened in October was, I don't know if it was pandemic related or he just wasn't ready yet, but the point was there was will on both sides to do this in December and get it done. Everybody was going by the words of the contract. The problem is Fury doesn't see it happening now the rest of this year, because the 19th has been put on ice because it conflicts with many college football games, which, remember, at the time when they looked at the 19th, a lot of those conferences hadn't yet decided or made schedules set, you know, because they were so uncertain about when they would play because of the pandemic. So now that there's a bunch of games on the 19th, it's not doable for a big pay-per-view for many reasons. And so when Bob Arum talked about moving the fight earlier in December, that gave me a red flag, because you never, you know this, Chris, you never hear about fights, particularly big fights, where, if you know, they switch fight switch dates all the time. Very rarely, I can't even think of a big one where they would do it moving it earlier on the calendar. Almost all the time it's after the fact. So then you look at the rest of the month of December, there was no real way to do that fight, because you have another pay-per-view with Errol Spence and Danny Garcia occupying a December date. You would never go on the 12th, which is 1 week later, and do two big pay-per-views in the same, or I'm sorry, the 12th, I believe, is a big UFC pay-per-view. So that wouldn't happen. And the 19th is not doable. And it's suicidal to go and do the fight on the Saturday, the 26th, the day after Christmas, when you'd have basically no audience with nobody paying attention. So December was a really rough month. And so according to the Wilder, I mean, to the Fury camp, the time limit by which to actually have this fight done had come and gone. And remember, this was a deal that both sides agreed to. It was mutual rematch clause. Who, you know, the loser had the right to pick it up. So if Fury had been the loser, he could have picked it up also. And the window was kept tight to get the third fight out of the way this year. Tyson Fury said, look, you've already passed the deadline. There's a lot of issues here. I've got a much bigger fight that I can do against Anthony Joshua should he defeat Kubrat Pulev. I'm going to fight, you know, somebody else on December the 5th. I'll presumably work out a deal for him to take less money. And he'll have his quote-unquote tune-up. Josh will have the pull-up fight. And then we'll get the fight that we really want to see, which is for the undisputed title between Fury and Anthony Joshua. And, all, you know, Deontay Wilder is just, you know, out of luck, it seems to me. Now, maybe there'll be a legal action. I don't know what they're, you know, neither one of us have a copy of the contract. But in talking to the Wilder camp talk, I talked to Shelley Finkel about this just yesterday. You know, and Shelley and I have a good rapport. He's open with me on a lot of things. He'll talk to you on background. He'll tell you different things. He'll talk to you for an interview. He just wouldn't go anywhere near this. He just like, I have nothing to say. He was polite, you know, a nice guy about it, but he just wouldn't say anything. So, you know, there's definitely some issues going on that side of the street.
Yeah, and look, you've heard, you know, Bob Arum kind of spell it out, at least from his perspective and Team Fury's perspective, that they're, you know, after that October date came and went, there really wasn't any contractual obligation for Tyson Fury to do this. That's clearly Top Rank's position in all this. Is it the actual one? Is it the legal one? That remains to be seen. But if they're right, yeah, this probably is the course of action Tyson Fury is going to take. I do wonder, like, is Tyson, whoever Tyson Fury fights, it'll be a lower level type of fight.
Oh yeah, no doubt about it.
But who's paying for that? Like, who is, like, if that fight's over in the UK and there's no crowd, I'm wondering where the money is coming from for that fight. But whatever.
Well, he's going to take less money. I mean, he's not going to get like $15 million, let's say. So there'll be some money. There'll be money from the BT Sport, his broadcast over there, probably on a pay-per-view basis. There'll be money on the American side of the ledger coming from ESPN. Again, not huge mega dollars, but there'll be money there. There'll be some sponsorships. A WBC heavyweight championship fight is still a commodity in the international market. There will be money that will come in from other countries. Presumably his opponent will not be another Brit. So whatever country that fighter is from, there'll be some additional revenue that will come out of that country, which probably would go to help pay for the opponent. So, but again, I think everybody who's involved understands that this is a matter to get ready for the really big one against Joshua. And that, yes, it's going to be less money than a Wilder Fury 3 or some other significant fight. But don't make any mistake that Tyson Fury is still going to make millions of dollars whoever he steps in the ring with on December the 5th, should that go forward.
Yeah, so if you're Deontay Wilder, what do you do from here? I mean, Deontay has been eerily quiet since the immediate aftermath of the Fury fight. He talked about, you know, what happened and why it happened, using the wardrobe he had on there as an excuse for it. But subsequently, Dan, he has been radio silent. You've seen some Instagram posts out there, but while Fury has been talking and calling him out, you haven't heard anything from Deontay Wilder. Do you have any understanding of what is going on inside Wilder's camp right now, and why he's been so silent?
The only thing I know about what's been going on in Wilder's camp is that he made the decision to jettison Mark Breland from his corner. A story that I wrote about and broke that story on Boxing Scene, you know, about 2 weeks ago or so, which tells me that he has been thinking about resuming his career. If you're making the point that you're changing your corner and delegating more authority to Malik Scott, and obviously, you know, JD's has been with him since day one. So that tells me that there was the notion that it's time to start to get ready for some kind of fight. I don't think he necessarily thought that Tyson Fury would do this. And so maybe it came as a surprise to Deontay Wilder. Look, he's got to be disappointed for a variety of reasons. One, he wants a chance to win his title back and get revenge for, you know, the loss they took in February. But don't forget, he also had probably $20, $25 million on the table. No matter who Deontay Wilder fights in his next fight, it's not going to be that kind of money, obviously. So I'm not sure what he's going to do as far as his next fight goes. Whether he fights the rest of this year or not, that still seems kind of – I'd be a little skeptical about that because there's not that many dates that are there for him. You know, the Showtime schedule is essentially filled in terms of their upper-level fights, at least through December the 12th. The Fox dates are not entirely filled yet. There's still a couple lingering out there. But, again, are you going to squeeze Deontay Wilder in at the end of the year where the dollars are not going to be probably to his liking? Hard to say. So I just don't know. Right now I think there's a lot of unanswered questions in that camp right now, including – you know, whether or not they have any legal recourse as it relates to forcing a third fight with Tyson Fury.
Yeah, and, you know, when might that fight with Fury materialize? I mean, if he signs to face Anthony Joshua, and we'll talk about that in a second, but if he signs to face Joshua, that's a two-fight deal. Like, there'd be a rematch in that that particular match. So you could, and Deontay Wilder, I think, is going to be 36 next year. I mean, you're talking about a guy that only has a short number of years left. I mean, he might have lost his window, Dan, to fight Tyson Fury. If not lost, it would be something that, you know, even if he gets it, he might be too far past his best days to be effective in that fight.
I mean, one thing about Wilder, whatever his chronological age is, in his professional career, because he's had so many early knockouts, he's not a guy that's taken huge punishment in his fights. His, you know, his training
I get that, but he's a quick twitch kind of guy. He's a quick twitch kind of guy.
Yeah, yeah.
And those reflexes can go.
No, I mean, look, when there's an opportunity to make a big fight, and I've said this my entire career, you know, you make the fight because the window of boxing is small to begin with for all these guys for the most part. I mean, there's certain guys that, you know, go against the grain, whether it's a Mayweather or Klitschko or Bernard Hopkins, guys who are able to stay at a top level for 20 years. That's highly unusual. So when you have that chance, you must take it. Even if every single little item in your laundry list of things you want is not perfect, you sometimes have to do it. And the window to have Fury versus Wilder 3 was now in the months that came after what happened in February. Now, nobody necessarily thought there's going to be a global pandemic that's going to shut the sport down for 4 months, and that even when the fights are able to be done again, that for the most part, they would be done without the benefit of having a ticket-buying public. Now, that's being overcome to some degree. Again, not at the level that I think that the promoters and the fighters would want because of the fact that you do have fights like an Errol Spence and Danny Garcia that will take place with some fans at the Cowboy Stadium. The Gervonta Davis fight against Leo Santa Cruz that will be at the Alamo Dome. They'll have a limited number of fans that are going to be able to be in the arena. But that's still not necessarily enough to make up for what was a $17 million gate. Look, at the end of the day, the fighters, just like the promoters, just like the TV networks, just like the media outlets, just like, you know, regular working people, you're going to have to take less money sometimes if you want to keep a job. And so, you know, I never begrudge a boxer for making the crazy money that they can make. Good for them. It's a dangerous sport and their window is very small. But I'm not going to cry if Deontay Wilder or Tyson Fury or anybody else has to go from making $25 million to making, you know, $8 million, or Canelo from $35 million to $20 million, or whatever, you know, if he can work out something to put the lawsuit to bed with DAZN and with Golden Boy. So, you know, I'd like to see them make what they're owed, but I'm not going to cry for them. We all got problems, you know, and those guys making tens of millions, not one of mine.
So you heard from Eddie Hearn for the last however many months, he said that a Fury versus Joshua fight is pretty easy to make. We've got a financial agreement in principle. Bob Arum said this week that, you know, it would take like 3 hours to complete that deal. Do you believe that? I mean, we've seen some sticky negotiations between prominent stars in the past. How difficult might this deal be to complete?
I think that they have probably overcome the greatest hurdle, which will make it, I'll never say on a fight of that magnitude, I never say easy, but relatively speaking, easy compared to other big giant mega fights that we've seen in the past. So they say that they've already come up with the format in terms of how the dollars are going to be split. That's always the biggest thing, because this is not the kind of fight where, you know, the promoter and the boxer are battling over how much money you're going to pay me. This is all about percentages, because the money can potentially be so great that You don't have. Why are you going to worry about if you're going to guarantee Anthony Joshua or Tyson Fury, you know, 20 or 25? You know, you agree to a reasonable amount of money, which most fighters will do, and then everybody makes money because the event sells well. And Tyson Fury against Anthony Joshua obviously is the biggest fight, you know, in the sport, certainly in the heavyweight division. So that's one reason it can get done. Secondly, the window to make the fight is now, because neither guy is encumbered by another fight. Tyson Fury, if in fact he is free and clear of the third fight against Deontay Wilder, you know, he'd obviously have to win the fight that he's going to take in December. But once that happens, he's the WBC's champion. They have already said, and Mauricio Sulaiman on our media thing that we did with him this week already reiterated that there is no mandatory right now. So he is free and clear from a mandatory defense. On the ledger of Anthony Joshua, he has a mandatory against his IBF mandatory, which is the Kubrat Pulev fight, which is supposed to take place sometime in December in the UK. He still has his WBO mandatory against Alexander Usyk, who is co-promoted also by Eddie Hearn. So they could press that issue and cause some problems, but I suspect, knowing the Usyk camp, knowing Paco Varcarcel from the WBO, whose organization is the one that oversees that belt, they'll be able to work something out and take care of Usyk to have him step aside. You know, they're not going to let that get in the way of this fight. And I think it will still happen with all the belts, because that's a big lure of the fight, to have all four heavyweight title belts on the line in the same fight. I think they can get past that. So that could be a fly in the ointment, but not one in my mind that would ruin the fight. And frankly, if they don't fight each other, there's really no other option that can make them the money or that the public is interested in. Now, people say, well, you know, Floyd Mayweather and Pacquiao didn't fight for a long time. They still had other opponents where they didn't make the money they made against each other, but they had plenty of nice opponents to fight over those several fights that they didn't fight each other, until it got to a point where they were basically had no other choice, and then they fought each other. And with Anthony Joshua and Fury, I think they both want the fight. It's a huge fight in their country. It's a fight that can generate a huge amount of money, even if there aren't fans. And I just think that they'll get it worked out. And I believe Bob and Eddie when they say, you know, we can make this fight in a few hours. A few things have to fall the right way. Both guys have to win. They got to take care of the Usyk situation. But, you know, again, I never think this type of big fight is done till it's done. But on my non-cynic scale, it's pretty high that they can get this squared away, because they already agreed to the split, which is always the thing that's the roughest in these deals.
Yeah, and you can, if you're Fury's team and Joshua's team, because of this COVID crisis, you probably want to kick this into the summer, I would think. You know, just, you know, give yourself enough lead time that, you know, you can be as sure as you possibly can to have a big crowd in those venues. And you could spend the next 6 months promoting the hell out of it. Like, just say, like, we're going to do it July 16th, Wembley Stadium, yada, 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 and, like, have the buildup be enormous. Fury's a huge talker. Joshua will talk and can be a decent talker at times. Just spend, you know, all that time building up that fight, and I think you'd have a really terrific promotion for that fight, which is great. All right, let's move on to the fight this weekend, where we will have four belts on the line. Don't ask me how. The WBC, with their gymnastics on that franchise championship, I'll never fully kind of grasp there. But Vasily Lomachenko, Teofimo Lopez for the undisputed lightweight championship of the world. Dan, Lomachenko comes in the far more accomplished boxer with his gold medals, his world championship belts, his bigger fights. But I don't know, in the last couple of weeks, I've seen a lot of kind of momentum, or at least a shift in interest in the belief that Teofimo Lopez can pull off the upset in this fight. How do you see this fight? Do we start with like a percentage? Like, who's the favorite by what percentage? You think it's 60-40, 70-30, Lomachenko? How do you see it?
Well, part of the reason, by the way, that I think that you've seen that energy shift towards Lopez is because he's the one that's been out there talking. He's been out there more present in the press and doing interviews and that sort of stuff. And Lomachenko was, you know, much more low key. You know, I did an interview with him, but it wasn't like I don't think he did like, you know, 1,000 interviews. So that's one of the reasons why I think the spotlight has been more on Lopez. And he's frankly, you know, he's the younger, more exciting guy in the way he, you know, goes about his business. And there's more drama in that camp. You know, the Lomachenko camp, everything is calm and cool with the dad. They're a unit. Everything is like business as usual. A little bit more drama on the Teofimo Lopez side. In terms of the percentages of how I see the fight, you know, I have gone back and forth on the fight a million times, you know, even before the fight was actually made, just when they were contemplating, and this was something that was, you know, seemingly going to happen. I say Lomachenko without question is the favorite. No doubt about that. You know, is it 60-40? Probably, maybe even a little bit more. But I think even the people that would say that Lomachenko is a clear-cut favorite can absolutely see reasons and ways in which Lopez can win the fight. You know, he's explosive. He's got heart. He's got desire. He's never lost before, so that's not in his mind. He really has a chip on his shoulder. And one thing that I have seen over the years is, for him, this is everything. This is it. This is the big one. This is the Super Bowl. This is everything. This is everything that he and his dad have been talking about and focusing on and wanting and looking towards for literally the last few years, pretty much not that long after he turned professional. This is his biggest fight by 1,000,000%. For Lomachenko, this is not a fight that he craved, that he had to have. He wants belts, and he's had other opportunities to win belts in multiple weight classes. He's had a unification fight. So, yeah, I mean, he's obviously fighting a very talented and formidable opponent in Lopez. But if you ask Lomachenko, is Teofimo Lopez your biggest fight? He's noncommittal. Yeah, it's a pretty important big deal fight. But, you know, at the time that they occurred, is it bigger than when he fought for a world title in his second pro fight? Maybe not. Is it bigger than when he fought for a title and tied the all-time record and whitewashed Gary Russell in his third fight? I don't think so. Is it bigger than, you know, when he fought what at the time was a hugely hyped up fight when he went up to lightweight in the first place and fought in Madison Square Garden from a huge crowd against Jorge Linares and scored a knockout? You know, that was a huge fight at the time. Point I'm making is that he's been in big fights before, so his enthusiasm factor might not be as much, where Lopez has been totally focused and tunnel vision on this one opponent for his entire career, essentially. And that can sometimes make a difference.
Yeah, and, you know, my belief, or the growing belief in Lopez, does have something to do with Lopez. I think he's an excellent fighter. But it's also the vulnerability of Lomachenko at 135. He's just not a big 135. And look, his toughest fights, as you know, have come at 135. I mean, Gary Russell might have been the most talented guy that Lomachenko has faced, but at 126, Lomachenko is like untouchable. Like, he can't be beaten at 126. I don't think he can be beaten at 130 pounds. At 135, he's undefeated, but he's shown flashes of vulnerability. The Linares fight, getting knocked down, and now he's going up against Lopez, who is, in addition to being explosive, is a pretty big 135. Like, only has probably a fight, maybe two, left at 135 pounds before he goes up to 140. So I think if Lopez trains and has a game plan that's proper, he might be able to do some things physically with Lomachenko. Because Lomachenko, as good as he is defensively, he does want to be an offensive guy. Like, he comes in, he throws punches, he tries to assert himself in the ring. And that's something that if Lopez is as good as we think, he might be able to take advantage of.
Well, I think Lomachenko and their team, they're smart, and they know boxing. They've done their homework. You know, I don't think their game plan is going to be anything remotely resembling, let's stand in front of this guy and slug it out. I mean, he knows he's in, you know, he's in with the puncher in this fight compared to himself. I mean, don't make any mistake. You know, Lomachenko can still crack as 135 pounder. He's, you know, still won most of his fights in that division by knockout. But he's going to have to be the boxer in the fight. And they know that they're going to have to rely on his quickness, on his great footwork, on his ability to show different angles and to switch sides and, you know, do the kinds of things that maybe Teofimo Lopez, in a lot of early knockouts and a lot of fights that weren't competitive, hasn't ever really had to see. Even when he won the title against Richard Comey in a great performance, you know, scored a second round knockout, but he was not challenging that fight at all. I mean, he didn't, you know, get anything back from Comey. Even if you thought that Teofimo was going to win the title that night, most people figure, you know, Richard Comey is a very solid fighter. He's a true professional. He's got a good amount of experience. He's going to at least make Lopez work to get the belt. That didn't happen. So you're talking about a guy that hasn't really ever been in a quote-unquote real fight in his entire career, except for the one time against an unheralded, unknown Japanese fighter that he fought in the Eliminator, where he won, but he didn't look great. And, you know, granted, you know, Lopez has talked about there was a lot of issues going on in his life at that time, so maybe he wasn't totally focused. I'll cut him some slack on that. I'm just making the point that he's never been in a fight where he really had to focus on a guy who everybody knows is a super talent, a Hall of Fame level talent. This is a different level of opponent compared to anybody that Lopez has ever fought. Is Teofimo Lopez that much of a different opponent compared to anybody else that Lomachenko has fought? I don't believe so. But he's young, he's strong, and he's hungry, And if he lands a shot, anything can happen. He's got a good chance to do some damage. So it just makes for a fascinating fight. I can see so many different scenarios in the way this thing goes. But, you know, at the end of the day, if you make me pick, and I have all the respect for what Lopez has done and the way his father has molded him and trained him, they got a good team. It's hard to pick against Vasily Lomachenko. Until you show me that you can take him down, you know, I'm rolling with the guy that a lot of people think is pound for pound number one.
Yeah, and just to say this, and I said this to Teofimo, he's coming up a little bit later in the show, like, good for Teofimo at 23 years old for running towards this fight. We don't see enough of that in boxing. Like, Lomachenko didn't have to take this. Teofimo also didn't have to take this. He could have said, look, I got my belt at 135. I'm going to seek other things, maybe go to 140. He's not making an obscene amount of money, as you know, Dan, for this fight. Like, it's not like it's a pot of gold sitting there waiting for him. He's still doing it in the most money he's ever made. Most money he's ever made. But, you know, he's also leaving some money on the table by doing it in an empty venue, basically. So it's like, put it this way, there are plenty of reasons for him not to take this fight. He could have found it out any way he wanted to, but he ran towards it. He said to me in our interview later, he's like, you know, I want to be great. This is how you become great. You beat other great fighters. And it's just that attitude I just love to hear, because I don't think we get that enough in boxing, where they, you know, greatness isn't always equated with, the significance of your wins. It's oftentimes equated with the zero on your record, which is utterly meaningless, or how much money you make in every single fight. That Teofimo seems to understand that to become the best, you've got to beat the best, and he's trying to do that in this fight.
And he is following the footsteps of a few fighters in the recent past that have done the same thing, where they fought everybody, they understood that to be the great fighter that they claimed to be, you had to take on the best opponents, and you might not always win. The only one that always won really was, you know, at least in recent years, I guess, was Mayweather. But, you know, take a look. Manny Pacquiao never run from anybody. Oscar De La Hoya never ran from anybody. Canelo Alvarez has never run from anybody. You know, those are the types of fighters that they've all those guys, they're all three first ballot legendary Hall of Fame caliber guys. They all took a few losses here and there, but not you know, you can't say anything about that they didn't fight the guys you wanted to see them fight, whether it was in multiple weight divisions or the best guys in their own weight division. I mean, maybe it took time to make certain fights, sure, but they fought the guys that you wanted to see them fight. And I think Lopez has that similar mentality. Now, if he wins the fight, will that change as he goes forward and has this, feather in his cap, and will he change his attitude? I kind of tend to doubt it. I mean, he's a fighter through and through. I mean, he'll want to, you know, I'm not saying in the next fight, you know, maybe he'll want to take a couple of defenses or whatever, move up. But the point is, it's in his DNA, like it was in Oscar's DNA or Canelo's DNA or Pacquiao's DNA, to fight the best guys. And hopefully Lopez will follow that. And there's some other young fighter out there who's coming up, who's watching what Lopez is doing, who will adopt that attitude also and will create the next set of guys. And by the way, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention other guys that do the same sort of stuff, where, you know, an Errol Spence, for example, is fighting quality opponents, fight in and fight out. Now, maybe we haven't gotten the Crawford fight yet, but that doesn't diminish the fact that he is taking on a Sean Porter's and the Danny Garcia's, and even to an extent a Mikey Garcia, or, you know, going to England and fighting Brooke, or, you know, taking on Lamont Peterson. They're developing resumes where there's nobody that I know that says Errol Spence won't fight top guys. And, you know, there's others out there also. I mean, you know, Chocolatito Gonzalez is another one that comes to mind, where they fought everybody. And like you said, we need more of that, and it'd be make the sport much, much better.
Yeah, and look, even if he loses, he doesn't really lose. Like, did Canelo lose when he lost to Floyd Mayweather? Like, no, he still maintained his profile. He went out there, won some other big fights after that. There's no real downside, I think, for Lopez in this fight. I don't see it. I think win or lose, he is going to get a bounce out of this, and it's going to be a positive bounce one way or the other. So put a button on this, Dan. Not to look past this fight at all, because this is the fight that I'm looking forward to the most for the rest of the calendar year, really. But a few weeks after, you're going to have Gervonta Davis taking on Leo Santa Cruz. Santa Cruz is tough, but I would make Davis a considerable favorite, especially if the fight is, 130, 135, whatever it is, I guess.
It's at 130, but yeah, they're putting the belts at 130 and 35 on the line, of which there is history, you know, looking at like Sugar Ray Leonard against Donnie Lalonde, looking at Floyd Mayweather against Marcos Maidana, not unprecedented.
Yeah, it should be pointed out that neither one of those are real belts, just for the record.
Just saying.
It's just neither one of the real belts. But Gervonta Davis is going to fight in the same month. Davis is incredibly popular. His team has done an excellent job in kind of building him into a star in this sport, doing big numbers on regular premium TV, doing big numbers in attendance. What do you think the likelihood is that Gervonta Davis will face the winner of Vasily Lomachenko, Teofimo Lopez?
Not very good, unfortunately. I mean, it's a great fight. I mean, and I've made comments about this. I've written about this. I did a whole commentary on the Impact Boxing show, Stars and Champions, that I host about this. The lightweight division at the moment, if you put Lomachenko to the side because he's a little older, he's not of their age group, and, you know, even though he has maybe a similar number of fights, he's an older fighter. But there's four young stud caliber fighters in the weight division. Gervonta Davis obviously is one of them. Devin Haney is another one of them. Teofimo Lopez certainly is one of them. And Ryan Garcia is one of them. And all four of those guys are in their early 20s, who have probably, hopefully, long careers ahead of them to do a lot of great things. And they all have personalities. They all have certain fan bases. They all have charisma. And they all can fight. And they're all good to watch fight. They're not boring or whatever. They make good matchups. If they could somehow figure out a way to mix and match those four fighters, whether it's at 135 pounds or down the road at 140 pounds or whatever, boxing would have so many good matchups to look forward to over the next, not year, year and a half, 2 years. This literally could take us through the next 7 or 8 years of them mixing and matching. And I don't want to, you know, speak blasphemy and say, oh, it's like, you know, Leonard and Duran and Hagler and Hearns. You know, those are bona fide, all-time great, legendary fighters. But these guys, if they would fight each other and engage in those kinds of fights, could develop and maybe make themselves into Hall of Famers. And again, I'm not saying people are going to speak of them on the same level of reverence that they speak about the four kings. But those four guys fighting off with each other over the next couple of years, next, like I said, 5 years, 6 years, whatever it is, where they're still in the, you know, not even in the end of their 20s. Do you know what that could be for boxing? A boon? There's got to be political will on both sides, whether, you know, it's the networks or it's the management or the promotion. And frankly, the boxers got to put their foot down and say, you know what? I'm not fighting that guy. You go get me any one of those other three guys. And I think that, you know, we could have a great renaissance in the 35 and 40 pound weight classes. But again,
I think Dan too, it would really disappoint, especially if Lomachenko wins, it would disappoint me if Gervonta turned that down. Like, cause you know, Lomachenko is going to want that fight because he wants all the big fights and Gervonta is a big fight. There are ways to wriggle out of it. Oh, Showtime over here, PBC over there. Like there are certain things you could already anticipate. But if I'm Gervonta Davis, that's an opportunity. Just like Teofimo has an opportunity to face a truly great fighter for, you know, both wealth and accomplishment in the form of the Undisputed Championship. I don't know how Gervonta would wriggle out of that. Like, I don't know how you would explain that away. Like, do you? Like, can you think of an explanation that would make any sense if that fight gets turned down by Gervonta Davis?
Unfortunately, I don't think Gervonta Davis is the one that has the final say specifically. I mean, yes, he does because he's the athlete, but there's other forces at work, whether it's your promotion or it's your management or it's your family or it's your buddy or it's, you know, the PBC or whatever. Gervonta's going to have, if he wins the fight, obviously he's going to have a lot of options. He's going to be one of the young, prime guys that the PBC has that can, you know, potentially become a significant pay-per-view draw or a draw, you know, certainly he already is a draw at the gate. He already draws pretty good TV numbers. He's got to keep himself out of trouble, obviously. But,
what's his other option? Tell me, what would be his other option? Like, I don't see it. Gary Russell?
I mean, I was going to say that's certainly a possibility. Russell was making noise about wanting to move up to fight him at one point. I'm assuming that even if this fight is at 130, that after this fight is over, we're not going to see Davis at 130 anymore. This is sort of like I won't call it a gimmick, but, you know, this is like a one-time thing, I think, of him fighting with the two belts at stake. So my suspicion will be that post Leo Santa Cruz, if he should win or even if he loses, he'll be fighting at 135 and eventually being at 140 for sure. He was already having trouble making 135 in one of his defenses or when he fought not that long ago. But what's the other option? I mean, they can come up with somebody. I think that they think that they can make Gervonta Davis, you know, whoever he's fighting can become an event. Can it be a pay-per-view? I mean, they might try. I mean, I think one thing that will convince them or help them decide how they're going to go forward in the future is to see what are the returns on this fight, on both in terms of the pay-per-view as well as the fact that it's going to be one of the first fights of any consequence. There'll be some fans allowed to buy tickets because they're having this at the Alamo Dome in Texas, where they do allow to have some fans in the arena the same way they're going to do when they do the Errol Spence fight against Danny Garcia in Arlington at the Dallas Cowboys AT&T Stadium. But if they sell a good amount of tickets and the pay-per-view numbers do very well, they will probably won't feel a huge need to match him up with like the next number one guy. So, you know, I don't know what's going to happen after this.
That would be, I mean, look, the 135s are not really PBC controlled, at least the top ones. I'd be reluctant to see him move to 140 too quickly. I mean, he hasn't shown the power he had at 130 at 135. Mm-hmm. I wonder what he'd show at 140. Would he be significantly smaller? I mean, like Regis Prograde is kind of signed over there. I don't think you want to do Regis Prograde with Davis right now. Like that might be too much too soon, too big for him to biting off more than he can chew is the phrase I'm looking for in that one. So I don't know, man. Like I don't know how you justify it, because I know Lomachenko will be out there saying, I want that fight. You know, Bob Arum will be out there saying, we can make that fight. We proved we can do cross promotions before with Fury versus Wilder. Yeah, I guess it'd just be it's tough to explain away. Like he's saying, well,
I mean, like maybe they, you know, maybe the Santa Cruz fight's so good and competitive they could do a rematch. Maybe that presents itself. You just don't know until the fight takes place. But you know, I'm still thinking about those four young guys, you know, maybe not in the next fight, but over the course of time squaring off in a round robin with each other. You know, and if like Lomachenko wins, you know, maybe they'll be they'll want to go. Look, there had been a fight ordered between Lomachenko and Devin Haney, for example, and you know they went in their divergent directions at this point because Loma wanted this fight with Teofimo Lopez. Haney, you know, was looking to fight for the belt that became the non-franchise belt, whatever. But you know, so maybe there'll be some movement to make a Haney fight with Lomachenko. Maybe there will be a call about a Gervonta Davis fight. But you know, there are other lightweights out there that may not have the top name recognition, but who are still, you know, good fighters. And, you know, I'm not worried about top rank matchmaking with Lomachenko, and I'm not worried about how PBC is going to go ahead. You know, they know what they're doing when it comes to matching their guys too. And, you know, we may not get the fight, and hopefully whatever they do put in its place will be something that's interesting at least.
I hope so. But like, you know, we were just talking about, you know, the boon for boxing that, you know, all those young guys matching up would be. I mean, even before that, you know, if you can go Lomachenko versus Lopez into Lomachenko versus Davis, like consistency is key, man. Like, you know that, like you can't just keep giving fans one-offs like once a year and say, here's your dessert. Now eat your, you know,
I totally
garbage.
Agree. Totally
like,
agree.
He's got to keep showing these good fights over and over again. Speaking of potential good fights,
you had a chance to speak. I know where you're going with this, Chris.
You had a chance to speak to the WBO middleweight champion of the world, one Demetrius Andrade. And as he often is, he was very outspoken when he spoke to you, calling out everybody from Canelo to Billy Joe Saunders to Jermall Charlo, the undefeated WBC title holder who just won and defended his title a couple of weeks ago. Dan, I don't know if you've heard, but I'm kind of obsessed with this fight. I'm a little bit obsessed with this fight. Give me your read on the situation. Like, I think just like we talk about Davis Lomachenko, we'd all love to see Andrade versus Charlo. It's a high level fight between two high level guys. But what were your takeaways from that conversation with Andrade?
Well, I've known Demetrius for his whole career. I've covered him extensively. I've been to his fights. I've interviewed him dozens of times. I know him. I know his father. I know his team. I feel like I have a very good feel for, you know, of what is real and what he wants to do and not the nonsense. I genuinely believe that he wants those fights. He's not looking, I mean, yes, he wants to get paid, obviously, but they're not looking to like break the bank for some freakish amount of money that, you know, when you ask for so much, that really says, well, we're not really interested. You know, a fair deal, and he'll be in the ring with any of those guys. He made a very good point to me. The fight he wants the most, it seems, is the one against Saunders. He feels like there's unfinished business. He was the mandatory when Billy Joe Saunders had the WBO middleweight title. The fight was signed, set, and they were supposed to meet end of 2018 in Boston. Billy Joe Saunders had a bad drug test. The fight was canceled. The Massachusetts, for obvious reasons, they wouldn't license him. And so instead, Billy Joe Saunders, knowing that he would be stripped of the title, vacated the title. And instead, Andrade ended up fighting a late replacement opponent who was totally unknown, whitewashed him, dropped him four times, won a shutout decision, and claimed the belt. But he still wants to fight Billy Joe Saunders, who subsequently moved up to 168 pounds and won the WBO title there against a similarly obscure opponent, has really not done anything since, made like maybe one defense against just a, you know, a no count kind of opponent. And so he wants to do that fight. And he makes the point that, look, we're both signed to the Matchroom Boxing. We're both fighting on DAZN. We have unfinished business. We both can talk up the fight. And instead of you, meaning Billy Joe, sitting there and as he said, being Canelo Alvarez's bitch because you're just waiting for Canelo to maybe give you a fight that was supposed to take place in May that wouldn't happen. He goes, Canelo, he's fine. He's made tons of money. He doesn't need the fight if he wants. You know, you and I, we still need to fight to secure our future. So stop waiting for Canelo. Let's do this, and we can put ourselves in a position then to get the fight. So he wants to go up to 168, wants to be a three-division champion. He's won titles at 54, 60. He wants to win one at 68. So he's mainly focused on trying to lure Billy Joe Saunders into the ring. Good fight, I guess. Not a huge fan of Billy Joe's style. I'm not sure his style and Andre's style would mesh all that well, but I get where he's coming from. He feels there's unfinished business. But he also... sure, he wants to fight Canelo. He knows that. He's said that 1,000 times. You don't have to ask a middleweight or a super middleweight or a light heavyweight or a junior middleweight if you want to fight Canelo. The answer is yes. He would love to fight Gennady Golovkin also, but he knows that you know, they're not calling his name out. So if you can't get those guys, and he can't get Saunders, he's like, look, Charlo, he's an undefeated champion. I'm an undefeated champion. Let's do it. And by the way, if the little Charlo, who is at 154, wants to come up and get a piece of me, let him come up and I'll take him on also. So, you know, I have no doubt in my mind that Demetrius Andrade is deadly serious, for real, not just BS, that if offered an appropriate kind of arrangement to fight either of those, you know, any of those fights, either Charlo, Canelo, Golovkin, Billy Joe, whoever, he would do it. I have no doubt in my mind about it. And Eddie Hearn, his promoter, you know, at the end of last year, I guess it was, he did make a very sizable offer to Charlo to do the fight for $7 million as a one-off, tricks there, I guess, apparently. For whatever reason, that was declined. You know, I'd have to ask Charlo what the particulars were about that.
I tried that. It didn't go over well.
I heard that you ask bad questions from what I saw.
I do. I tried to drill down on that. It didn't really go.
You're asking a bunch of bullshit.
Yeah, I think that was something like that.
So, look, those are great matchups. I happen to agree with you, by the way. I mean, I respect Andre's desire to want to win a belt in the third weight class and go fight Billy Joe Saunders. Fine. But if I could pick, I would much rather see him fight Charlo instead of Saunders because it's a better fight. To me, it's a more meaningful fight. Both guys can talk. They're two undefeated Americans. Both want to make their name to show that they should be in a big, big fight against somebody else. And how do you do that? You earn it by knocking off the other guy who's an undefeated champion also. I mean, I also happen to think their styles would mesh pretty well because Charlo is an aggressive fighter. Andre is more of a counter puncher. He's a good boxer. Charlo is a good boxer, maybe not as slick, but both of them are very good in the boxing side of things. I think Andre's power is maybe a little underestimated. He has a couple of knockouts in his last few fights. He's scored a bunch of knockdowns. He's knocked down, Walter Konandoko, who he fought for the vacant title 4 times. You know, he dropped, Selesky when they fought each other in what was another whitewash opponent when he fought in Providence, who was a good opponent for him to fight, you know, a bona fide contender. So he's been knocking guys down. Charlo, of course, has looked very good. I mean, that is a very logical fight. It's also, if you ask me, Chris, it's not the kind of fight where you need some mega crowd to foot the bill. Because that's, I mean, all due respect to those guys, even if they were to fight in a place like a Providence where Demetrius is from or a Houston where Charlo is from or wherever, it's not the kind of fight that's going to draw 20,000 people or, you know, do millions of dollars in ticket sales. You know, it'll do a nice crowd wherever they do it. It'll have, you know, maybe they could get $1 million gate for a fight like that, you know, or thereabouts, maybe even a little bit more, but not like the 17 million of a Wilder and a Fury fight where if you don't have tickets available, it just makes the math impossible to do the fight. So it's a doable fight. I think it's plausible. But again, as I said about a lot of fights that we've talked about, not on this show as well as on others, there has to be political will on both sides. They have to want to do it, and you cannot make both sides want to do it.
And look, you know, people come at me for, you know, trying to get, you know, Andrade's a DAZN connected fighter. I do DAZN broadcast. I don't care. I don't care where you show that. I honestly couldn't possibly give a damn where you show that fight. It just makes no sense for these guys to fight other people when they're both sitting out there and available. And look, Dan, you're right. Like, there are reasons for everything. I can't get past Charlo not wanting this fight. Like, that's kind of what it boils down to. Like, Andrade's not coming to the table with, you know, his hand out, like, looking for money. He's bringing money. He's being, to your point, he's being backstopped by money. Is the $7 million still available? I don't know. It's post-pandemic. Who knows what's real now? But I would bet that real money is still in Eddie Hearn's coffers for that particular fight. I think they'd come to the table with real money for that particular fight. And I don't know, like, the only explanation, Dan, I can think on Charlo's side is that they're just not willing to take any real risk until a Canelo fight materializes. Like, look, that's the fight they want.
If you can make Derevchenko and Charlo and have it on pay-per-view, now granted it was a good card and his brother fought a meaningful fight on the same show, but that card did not do gangbuster pay-per-view numbers. And Look, I was happy to spend my money on it, no problem. I liked the show, yeah. I enjoyed the broadcast. Everything to me was fine. But that will be the stark realization, I think, that yes, it's a start to your pay-per-view career, but if you're doing about 100,000 pay-per-view buys for that kind of loaded show, you know, you're not yet a pay-per-view star. So, you know, you still need to fight a meaningful guy. And so I think, maybe call me crazy, and Eddie Hearn has said they would go over to the other side to do the fight. It doesn't have to be on the Zone. You know, like you, I don't care where the fight is. I'm agnostic on that point. If you can't afford to do the fight on a Fox platform, or DAZN doesn't want to pay for the a big amount of money to do it on DAZN, if you can do about 100-ish for a fight between Charlo and Derevchenko, I think you can do at least that or more, especially with the way that, look, all due respect to Derevchenko, nice guy, very good fight, a non-entity in the promotional part of a fight, because he just doesn't have that kind of bigger-than-life personality. English is not his first language, so, you know, he's pretty low-key in the build-up to that fight. You would have thought Charlo was fighting Charlo the way that it was promoted. Andre, if you get him going, and you saw in the story that I wrote, and that's, you're not forcing it out of him or pulling it out of him. He loves to talk. He has, you know, he made up a thing. This was like off the cuff. He was talking about that. I asked him about the recent fights he had where he was scoring a bunch of knockdowns and how he was pretty much winning, you know, fairly handily in all these decisions and even some of the knockouts. He says, look, I dismantle guys. Call me Dr. Dismantle. I thought that was hilarious. Like, and that's just one thing. He has the ability to say things that make you laugh, but also get across his point of view that, look, you know, don't mess with me. I'm a top fighter. And he wants to test himself. I mean, if he's not going to do it now, when? He's in his early 30s. He's been professional since he turned pro after the 2008 Olympics. So he's got that great amateur career. He has, you know, won 3 world titles, but he has not yet had the defining kind of fight. A Charlo fight would be that for him. And frankly, again, Charlo, he got a good win against Derevchenko. Has Charlo, in your mind, has he had a quote-unquote defining fight? No. Charlo versus Andre, that's a defining fight. And I'll tell you what, I know you've been driving the bandwagon on this, but I'm sitting shotgun, brother. I'm on.
Welcome
I'm
aboard. Welcome aboard.
I've always
Charlo.
Liked the fight. I've always
of
liked
course.
The fight.
No, I just like, and people like, yeah, you know, I get this on social media all the time. Like, I don't know why people care about like networks and politics. Like, why? It's like, do you ever hear in the NBA, like the Celtics can't play the Lakers because they're in different conferences? Like, it shouldn't matter to you what it means. But I hear people all the time say, Mannix, where's the energy for Golovkin versus Andrade? Well, come on. We all know the score on that one. Golovkin's not going to take a real fight until he gets the Canelo fight or until that fight is completely off the table. Canelo thought about fighting him, I guess, briefly at one point last year, but that never came about, and it's not going to happen.
I'm actually more interested in Charlo Andre than Charlo Golovkin. Being honest,
I'm saying Andre Golovkin. Like when Andre Golovkin's not going to take on Andre before a Canelo fight is settled.
Right, well, and I'd be perfectly happy to see that fight also. But I think there's a lot of reasons there's a lot of spice to a promotion between Charlo and Andre just because of the way that they talk. They have similar records. They are both guys in need of that kind of big time win, you know. And by the way, it sets up the winner to be where you can't argue that he should fight Triple G or he should fight Canelo or those two big name stars. You go in the ring and get a win against that other guy. You just beat a quality undefeated guy who was a champion. Now you can make noise right now about that, you know. Andre doesn't, I mean, we all know he's talented, and same goes for Charlotte, but they don't have the resumes at this point or the drawing power at this point to command fights with either of those other fighters. You knock off the other guy, you just might have a little bit more pull, at least in the public space. And look, the public, you know, makes their voices known. It doesn't always work out. We've been calling for Crawford and Spence now for the last couple of years. It hasn't worked. But it can't hurt when you have the public behind you, when you have prominent media behind you, you know, advocating for particular fights. Again, there's no reason why that fight can't be made. I don't think it costs that much money overall comparatively to make it. I think that it's a fight that's doable. The sanctioning bodies aren't going to get in the way of that fight. There's just 1,000 different reasons why that should happen, and I hope it does. And like I said,
yeah,
I will sit next to you on the bandwagon, and if anybody gives you grief, I'll be your enforcer, and I'll take care of them.
At least in the case of Crawford and Spence, like, Spence, you knew Spence was out there fighting real guys, to your earlier point. Like, Spence goes out and fights real guys. He fought, you know, he's fighting Danny Garcia. Before that, Sean Porter. Like, you know, he fought Keith Thurman. Like, he's fought all the guys that are all the top guys in his division. So he's fought the best.
Not Keith Thurman.
I'm sorry, I blanked on that for a second there. But he fought Mikey Garcia, you know, a guy that, well, coming up in weight, a top-level fighter. This is not the case. Like, if they announce Dan Charlo versus Eubank, I might actually boo. I might make a video of myself booing and just post that on social media.
I mean, not a bad fight, but it's not. Come on.
It has no meaning whatsoever.
Yeah, I agree with that. And you know what? Now that you say that, that probably would be the fight they wind up making.
Boo. Boo all the way around.
Because he's with PBC, and, you know, I agree with you about that. It's like, come on. You know, give us the fight that makes sense that people want. I mean, if there's ever going to be a time where people might do something not by the book, now in a pandemic might be the time to do that. You know what I mean?
If you want
the sport to still thrive and survive. And again, if a guy takes a loss against another undefeated champion, you think of Jermell Charlo, or if Andre loses, you know, a solid fight to the other guy, that suddenly they're meaningless and they're worthless and their careers are over. They're still younger fighters, and they can definitely be back and do lots of great things.
And still fight the same guys they're going to fight anyway, whether it's Liam Williams or
100%.
You know, Chris Eubank, it doesn't matter. Dan, always appreciate your time, man. Always great stuff. Thanks for being a friend of the podcast, joining me here on the show.
My pleasure, Chris. Appreciate it. Thanks for having me on, man. See you soon.
All right, Teofimo Lopez is here. The takeover continues this Saturday when Lopez will take on Vasily Lomachenko in a lightweight title unification fight. You can watch that on ESPN. Teo, how you doing, man?
I'm doing great, man. Feeling like a champ. Thank you for having me on. And, man, we're 5 days away. 5 days from making history.
So you've been in some big fights in your young career, most recently the fight against Richard Comey, your first world title fight. How does this compare? How you're feeling now a few days out versus how you felt before the Comey fight?
I got to say just more in line with everything that's going on, you know, and more structured about things and more determined. You know, I was very focused on the fight with Richard Comey, had a lot I had a lot to prove to myself more than anything, and to show and go out there that was that one step, you know, hey, we did something, you know, we made a mark. This time around, it's more than that. This is bigger than me. And that's why I look at it, and just going in there come October 17th, it's for all the marbles. I look at it. So, you know, I'm blessed to be able to have this opportunity and to be able to showcase all that come October 17th.
Yeah, franchise championship nonsense notwithstanding, this is for the undisputed lightweight championship. The winner of this will be the number one guy.
Say it again, man.
At 135.
Say it again.
Undisputed. Woo. None of that franchise champion bullshit. We're not playing that. This is for all of it, all right? All due respect to anyone else out there. This is for all the marbles at 135. Couple things I want to get out of the way here. It'll be 10 months since you last stepped into the ring. You fought four times back in 2019. Any concern on your end about ring rust or being less sharp than you usually are?
10 months for me, 14 months for Lomachenko. So we're both definitely going to be we haven't fought for a while. This is probably the longest that we both have been out of our sport. But it was It wasn't something, it was out of our hands due to the pandemic and due to everything that's going on, the situations with COVID-19. You know, so just things like that. I mean, honestly, we already cleared up the ring rust when it came to sparring. You know, we cleared up all that. So I don't think there's going to be any issues. You know, we know what we have at stake now, and we understand what we're about to get into.
So the other thing is that, you know, you've changed people recently in terms of helping you cut weight. Before that, you had some issues getting to 135. How has the weight cut been for this fight?
Oh, so good, man. So much better. And it's only getting better each and every camp, man. Honestly, this pandemic, despite everything, you know, I was still working out throughout the times. You know, I seemed beefier, you know, much more muscular, but the weight came off. And we're right on, you know, so weight is not an issue. The weight wasn't an issue against Richard Cormier, but I honestly feel this time around, it's a lot better, a lot easier, for sure.
So you deserve, Teofimo, all the credit in the world for taking this fight. Too many boxers don't or wouldn't take credit. You deserve all the credit in the world for taking it. You deserve even more credit for taking it during a pandemic when there is potentially real money that's not available to you in a live gate. My question is, why is now the right time for you to take on a pound-for-pound guy like Lomachenko when you could have easily kicked it down the road a little bit further?
I talked the talk and I walked the walk. You know, you got to stand by. I'm a man of my word, and I said that we're going to make that fight happen. You already know who I was going to face, and despite the pandemic and despite the shocking of the whole world just being at still for that moment. I mean, I'm a man of my word. We said 2020, we're going to make it happen 2020. And mainly on top of that, you know, I just look at it. It shouldn't be any other way than this. The only thing that does suck though, it's not the perfect time, but at least we still make it worth the time for everyone to tune in, everyone to get together, families, whatever. Just make sure you have your mask, wash your hands, and just tune in October 17th.
It should be this way, but I mean, why do you think it's rarely this way? I mean, if fighters operated like you, a young guy taking on a big challenge, if all fighters did that, boxing would be so much in such a healthier place overall. Why do you think that is in the sport that, you know, the best don't always want to fight the best?
I think it's it could be a lot of reasons. There's a lot of reasons. Maybe they don't fully have that confidence in themselves yet. Maybe they have to build it. Maybe they maybe their team is not very positive with them or feel that they can, you know. But that doesn't come with us. I guess the mentality also. You have to be mentally strong. You know, some have a limit of how strong they are. So it just comes with a lot of blood, sweat, and tears. You know, a lot of sacrifices, and really what I look at it also is it could be a part of Mayweather. You know, a lot of people want to be Mayweather, but if they don't realize, Money Mayweather before was Pretty Boy, and Pretty Boy fought every man that he possibly could get, and despite everything, and he had to work his way up. So it's the same thing. It's just everyone has to work their way up first and prove that they are the best and prove that they're worth watching, whether you hate them, whether you love them. And that's where you generate. And I think everyone's trying to generate that money, but you can't if you're not fighting the best. You can't market yourself outside and cross platforms worldwide if you're not doing and taking those risks and taking those opportunities that you have to, you know?
No, it's a great point about Mayweather too, because you're right. Before he became Money Mayweather, it was Genaro Hernandez at a young age. It was Diego Corrales in an epic fight that made him. It was Castillo a couple of times. He did. He fought you name it. He fought him before De La Hoya came around. And it's a great point about guys need to take on those challenges at a younger age. Let's talk for a second about
and another thing. I ain't no bitch, you know. So that plays another part.
That's another part to it, no question. Let's talk about the buildup for this fight. You have said some things about Lomachenko. Your father has said some more things about Lomachenko. From your perspective, do you genuinely dislike Lomachenko, or is this, you know, part of what we see often in boxing, a buildup?
No. I don't like him personally. I don't. As a person, as a human being, and how he may interpret himself and how he looks at himself and how he is, I had the chance to interact with him multiple times. And during those multiple times, it's not that I judge anyone. It's judge not, let's be judged first. You know, And that's what it came to about. And I had my reasons, you know. So, but outside of it, man, we could definitely take our hat off to him for all the accomplishments that he has done. Fastest three-time weight division champion, things like that. You got to give him that credit. Hey, you know, he's doing what he wants to do in the sport. He's trying to make a name bigger than anything. And that's why we are making this fight happen. You know, really what it comes down to is that we both are going for the legacy. We both are going for the glory, you know, and this is for all the marbles. When it becomes undisputed world champion in the lightweight division, I think be the fifth of this era, fifth undisputed world champion in boxing. So I think that'd be dope, man. It's really nice.
So one of the ways to look at this fight is kind of the numbers that Lomachenko puts up, at least according to CompuBox. He's one of the best CompuBox fighters that it's ever seen, especially when it comes to how he performs defensively. What is the key for you to crack what Lomachenko does defensively?
Honestly, man, there's so many different ways that you can crack that. And a lot of it comes to just you have everything is key points. There's a lot of key points to a lot of things. There's a lot of openings that maybe others haven't seen or don't know where to find them yet. So I'm very accurate with my things that I do. And my ring IQ is probably underestimated from a lot of people. So I look at it like I can't wait, you know, to express that and show it come October 17th. I'm not going to demonstrate that right now and say that to everyone. Just tune in. It's definitely going to be one to watch.
Yeah, and along those lines, you've won 12 of your fights by knockout. Your last decision came against Nakatani last year. I was there for that fight. That was widely considered not one of your better performances.
Yeah.
Do you enter this fight believing that you can win a decision, that if it does go to the judges, that you can do enough to win it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, we prepared ourselves for 12 rounds, you know what I mean? And not just, you know, light 12 rounds. I mean, hard, aggressive 12 rounds of sparring. You know, and the thing is that that's just the preparation. We understand that, and as the rounds get longer, you know, you have to have a lot more energy. You know, those are the times where it counts the most. So we did a lot of always. All I ever need, man, really is stamina. All I ever need is endurance. You just get me ready, get me in shape, and the rest is all mine. I know what to do when I'm in that ring. So for everything, man, we are prepared for the 12 rounds. We're prepared for anything that ever comes our way, the good, the bad, I'm ready.
It's got to be tough, Teofimo, to find someone that can do what Lomachenko does in a sparring situation. How do you prepare for him?
Same thing is tough for him to find someone like me. So it goes.
I agree.
It goes both ways, you know. And all we can do is just find someone of maybe one trait of what they have, or one or two traits of what we do. But we have so much out there, you know, we have so many traits that make us authentic and make us unique. So that comes in line. I know that, you know, I know all the sparring partners that I've had in my camp, it's not going to be Lomachenko. And I think that I can say, and I can speak for him the same way. Everybody that he has sparred is not going to be me. So knowing that and coming into that, I already know what is at stake, and I know what's at mentally. I know I'm prepared for all that. You know what I see, and I just adapt as the rounds go and as the minutes pass.
So Lomachenko is widely considered one of, if not the top pound-for-pound guy in all of boxing. If you beat him, should you be in that position as well?
When I beat him, yeah. You know, I could. When I beat him.
You've got to say when I beat him. I can't say when you beat him. You've got to say when you beat
when
him.
When I beat him, definitely I think that top five, top 10, wherever they want to put me in that list, you know, but that's up to the fans, man. That's up to everyone. That's up to all the analysts, fighters, and just the boxing reporters and stuff. Who does all the analysts and stuff? I don't pay too much into it. But as long as I'm not number one or anything, and the reason why I say that is because you have Crawford, you have Canelo, you have big time fighters as well that have done a lot in the sport. So I'm just working my way up, you know. And when that time comes, call me pound for pound when I'm making pound for pound money. Then that's different, you know. But at the moment right now, you know, wherever they want to put me at, I appreciate each and every one of everyone that does. I'm not there yet. You know, I'm not there yet. And this is just the beginning. And I still got to work my way. After this, we want more. So who's next? Who wants to get a who wants to get this ass whooping, you know?
And you are taking, you mentioned Canelo, you are taking kind of a Canelo-like approach to your career. I mean, Canelo, you know, took on at a certain level, started taking on all the tough challenges at 154, 160. I mean, he kind of recognized kind of what you said earlier that, you know, to be the star, to make the big money, you've got to take and win the tough fights. You put yourself at risk doing that at times, but it's really the only way to accomplish it.
Yeah, man. And you wouldn't want it no other way, though. You know, as a true champion, you don't want it any other way. You don't want to, just because of your O and you want to stay undefeated. Floyd did it his way. Doesn't mean everybody got to do it that way. And if you try to do it that way, you're going to fail each and every time because that's Floyd Mayweather. There's no other, there's no second guy that's Floyd, you know? You can't copy that. You know, you got to be yourself. And this is just who I am, you know what I mean? And that's what it comes to. I'm the type of fighter, I live by the old rules and I live by the old timers and how they were. No matter what, they faced each other. Big time fights, probably bigger than these fights that have been going on. Way bigger. Tommy Hearns, Marvis Hagler. The list, you know me, I could say a whole bunch of fighters that, and they faced each other. They did not care, you know, and they did it because they wanted to be the best and prove to themselves, not to everyone, but to themselves that they are the best in their division and they're the best in boxing. So
those were the days when, you know, you could do big fights on like a Wednesday. I think that that Sugar Ray and Hearns was on like a Tuesday or a Wednesday, one of their fights.
Sold out, like, and it will be sold out on a weekday because it was just that big, you know? And the fact that I feel like those are men, those are real men coming there and fight, you know, not trying to look pretty while doing it and just trying to win, win against competition that's not even on, that's going to be worth watching.
Mm-hmm. And just lastly, you fight an exciting style that often gets a rise out of a crowd. There's not going to be a significant crowd at this event. Do you have to prepare for that mentally? Have you thought about what that experience might be like?
It's definitely going to be different for sure. You know what I mean? And it goes for both of us. We're both fighters that have been in big arenas and have many fans and many people in attendance. So, you know, it goes for both of us. I definitely know that it's going to be different, you know, especially with the magnitude of this fight. We're not going to have, we're not going to be able to have that feeling of, man, this is a big fight. It is a big fight, but just going into it, the fans, not really going to be a lot. We have 250 people now too, and majority is for all first responders, you know, and that's just to give back, and that's important always, you know. That's why we are doing this fight on free cable TV. It's going to be live on ESPN. So for everyone tuning in, do not miss it. I mean, we're thinking about the pandemic. We're thinking about what's going on right now in the real world. And that's why we're able to become so successful about it. You know?
Yeah, you've become must-see TV in your young career. This fight, I think, is the biggest fight since Tyson Fury, Deontay Wilder, biggest fight scheduled for the rest of the year. It's going to be awesome, man. Good luck, Teofimo. I look forward to talking to you next time when you are the undisputed lightweight champion.
Yes, you already know. Hey, and for everyone tune in, it's the Takeover, Teofimo Lopez. And ladies and gents, this is just the beginning.
Awesome, man. Thanks for joining me, Teo.
No, you got it, man. Thank you. And
I appreciate you.
Hope you enjoy your rest of your week and hope you enjoy the fight.
You too, brother. Good luck Saturday.
Thank you.
All right, that's it for this week's episode. My thanks to my guests. As always, subscribe to the podcast over at Apple Podcasts. Rate, review, you know I appreciate it, and I'll see you next week.